This is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here with Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. How are you?
Yep, vaccinated.
Yep, we're both vaccinated now. So
yep, free from infection.
Yeah.
Well, we've got allegedly.
We've probably got another 10 days or so, haven't you?
I believe so, yeah. It's about two weeks, isn't it? 2 to 3 weeks. But thank goodness we're getting through it, which is good.
So yeah, it's excellent. It's really good.
Weather's starting to look up a bit, you know, days are pulling out. And you've been doing a huge amount of walking.
I have. I did almost 4.5 million steps since the first lockdown in the UK.
And that's about, almost exactly 12 months ago as well, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is 12 months a day and over 3,000 kilometres. So worn through two pairs of walking shoes.
That's incredible. Do you feel any better for it?
Do I feel any better for it? Yeah, I think so. I just think it's really helped me, kept me focused and kept me sane and gave me some kind of routine for the day, really.
Yeah, oh, that's definitely well worth doing it for. If not for, just the health benefits of being out walking physically, it's all good.
Well, the fact that I've managed to walk almost every day shows the weather actually hasn't been horrendous over this past year.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't gone anywhere near that. I think I've averaged about every other day, but not anywhere near as far as you've been walking.
Yeah.
That's good. Excellent. Anyway, we're not here to talk about, but this isn't a fitness podcast. This is not at the moment anyway.
that would be a move for us, would it not?
It certainly would be a pivot of a certain type, wouldn't it? That would be a hell of a pivot. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we're still a data storage podcast, a little bit of a focus on data today. And we're going to talk about disaster recovery. What a great subject. Something we have to do, something we have to put in place, but not necessarily something that's particularly loved by people, I think. I think it's one of those sort of things people either grudgingly do or think, I should do that. And I think that's why we're going to talk about it today based on, experiences of the last couple of weeks, especially with, not picking on them particularly, but I guess OVH, their data center fire has sort of highlighted the need for this, decent level of protection.
Well, I think OVH are interesting because actually it indicates, and I think we'll probably get into this, it indicates some of the issues people have when they're designing applications or services which run in somebody else's data center.
Absolutely, yeah. It's still a computer, but it just happens to be somebody else's in their data center. Mm-hmm. We'll definitely get to that. I'll fill everybody in, just give them a bit of background as to what actually went on. So OVH are a French outsourcing company. They basically offer, I guess it's just bare metal or VMs, isn't it? It's a very sort of basic level of service that they offer, but they've got a number of data centers in France spread around, I think some other locations. But this one happened at one of their data centers in Strasbourg. Now, from what I'm aware, from what I've managed to work out looking at the information online, this was a data center that I think had been built by placing shipping containers on top of each other, stacking them, as far as I'm aware. But the fire basically took down the whole of their data center. They've got, I think, 4 in that location. Naturally, it took down all of the physical servers that were in there and anything else that was running on that platform. There's been an ongoing rolling story talking about what has happened and what they've done since. But I think even today, they've binned another data center and decided they're not going to try and recover it. They're going to just have to rebuild it at some point. So it was pretty serious in terms of an outage for them and naturally very serious for their customers. And not the sort of thing you really want to hear has happened to your service provider.
You don't want to hear this thing, especially this because it's been so destructive as well.
Yeah, it certainly has. I just thought I'd put a list here as well of some of the other things that have happened over the years. I mean, probably the most obvious one would be 9/11 and the Twin Towers and the fact that some of the businesses there had data centers in both towers, which, gosh, you wouldn't ever think that something like that would be a risk that you should be having to plan for. But we'll discuss risk and impact in a little while. Obviously, Bunsfield. Bunsfield is fairly close to me in Hemel. What year did that happen? 2005? 2006, maybe?
I think it was something like that. I'm sure most of our listeners probably won't be aware of it, so you might want to give some detail to this one.
So Bunsfield is an oil terminal near Hemel Hempstead, where the UK basically ships the oil around in pipes. So pipes ship the oil from various different depots, and petrol as far as I'm aware, around the country. So rather than have to put it on tankers, it all goes in underground pipes, but it gets stored in certain places. And Bunsfield was a big store for oil. Now, from what I remember, I think they had a sensor problem, and basically they were filling up these tanks remotely on a Sunday morning, and one of them overfilled, and it basically, as it overfilled, it spilled out and let out a lot of vapors, and something, some equipment, electrical equipment, caught it, and there was an enormous explosion, which apparently was heard in the Netherlands. It was that far. It was that bad, and they had to leave the fire, let the fire burn out. But there was a number of other buildings nearby, belonging to companies. One of which was an outsourcing company that was running websites for other people, and their building was completely destroyed. And that also then took down those websites. So it was quite a major impact. Just as a little aside, I drove past Bunsfield whilst it was on fire a few weeks later or days later, down the M1, and I could feel the heat through the glass of the window of the car. It was so powerful, and I was about 400 yards away. So, you know, that's how hot it was burning. Again, nobody guessed that was going to happen, I guess. And the other one I found out, thought was quite interesting, was, and I'd forgotten about this, but Delta Airlines had an outage in 2016, and that was related to a fire as well. But I think what happened was they had a fire and they put it out, and it burned through some equipment, but they didn't have a backup for it. So that was the end of that. So it happens, I think, is the first thing. Might not happen very often, but it happens.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, I think we've been involved in disasters not on the same scale. I think we've both experienced them. So I've probably had it happen two or three times in my life. I had lost a data center at one company because the PDUs were overloaded. Nobody'd really monitored that, but that basically took a whole data center out for several days. And people trying to do a control shutdown, which didn't work, and because people was and people trying to stand next to PDUs and with fire extinguishers, everybody trying to shut everything down.
Cranky.
So I've seen that. I've had very similar things with the fuel oil. I actually know of a building where somebody was distracted, may have been talking to a young lady, and had not attached the fuel hose properly and filled a basement full of fuel oil. So I've seen that happen.
Wow.
That actually didn't have a data center in, but the building needed to be evacuated for a long period of time. The fumes, and you could, the sudden panic as all the power has to be taken off because you've got a building full of fumes. So yep. I've seen that. And I'm sure you've experienced very similar things or certainly experienced things.
First job I ever had, I think within the first 6 months, I think. This was sort of late 80s. This was an outsourcing company, ran mainframe services for other people. Data center got extended because the business was going well. The engineer was in testing the Halon across both bits because they'd obviously extended the Halon system. Forgot to turn the Halon to test when he pressed the button and set the Halon off with everybody in the data center, which obviously was a real risk for the people who were in there. Thankfully, everybody got out okay, but of course, everything just died because... You know, all the oxygen's gone and all the power gets cut and that's it. And not only that, but anything that was not nailed down was hitting the roof. So it was a real mess. So, you know, and you wouldn't expect that to happen. And I've also done some work. I did some work about 12 years ago for a large financial in the UK, looking at their replication and their data protection and the backup. And they were superbly exposed if they'd had a problem because they'd only had replication on a very small proportion of their applications and were relying on tape recovery to do the rest. And the process they were using meant that there would be a natural demand for those tapes across tens of thousands of restores, yet the data was only stored on a few hundred tapes. So you would hit masses of contention on restore. And they didn't really have a plan for how to serialize which ones they'd bring back first. So not everything I've seen has been an issue. And you know, I've been involved in DR tests all over the place. But, you know, you see it all the time. And I think it's very easy to think that everything comes down to a disaster of losing your data center, but it doesn't. So, you know, you could have a hardware failure. You could have a disk in a hardware in a machine. You could have some memory in a machine. The whole server could go up. The rack could go. You could have flooding, fire, oil in the basement, like you just said, Martin. But they're just the hardware side of things. But, you know, it doesn't have to be just like that. You could have an incident where somebody could stop you getting to your building to go in and service it or do some sort of maintenance on it. You know, if imagine there was a gas leak or even radiation or something like that, you know, it's something like that could happen. And then you've got the whole sort of malicious attacks, the sort of the logical attacks on the data, things like ransomware attacks or maybe a disgruntled employee who comes along and just decides to wipe everything. And of course, the stupidity angle, where somebody just does a stupid upgrade, makes a mistake, fat-fingering things. And I think we had one that long ago with Google, where people couldn't get to their Google Docs because the system assumed that everybody was basically trying to hack their content. Mm. So it blocked all their access, which is unbelievable. So it's not all about a big data center loss, is it? There's a whole spectrum of things that could happen.
There's all kinds of things which could happen. And what often people don't realize or don't think about is, if there's a problem in the building where your data center is, say there's a fire in the building, even if your data center is untouched, that date your building will have its power taken off. Depending on the nature of the fire, you won't be allowed back in the building, because basically the fire service and the emergency services take control of your building. You may or may not get it back that day or several days later. It will take some time for this to happen. We always used to laugh. I used to work for a retail bank which had their data center right next to the Thames. So if anybody listening to this who works in the UK will know which one it is.
I know which one it is.
Yeah.
Because I work there too.
Yeah. Supposedly it was on the ditch path to Heathrow. So supposedly that building could sustain a direct hit from a jumbo jet. And if there would be as a crumple zone above, but the data center would not exist. Which everyone thought, oh, this was great. Until I pointed out the fact that it didn't really matter, because nobody was going to be allowed to be back in the building. The power would be off. Your systems would be maybe okay, but you weren't going to be bringing them out anytime soon. So you better have a good DR plan, because it was...
Well, also because if the people were above the data center and that part of the building wasn't protected to the same degree, they could all be dead.
And there are many funny stories about that building with the blast-proof windows after one of the IRA bombing campaigns, where somebody worked out that the windows would survive, but the mountings round them wouldn't, and the windows would just blow in solidly and wipe out all the operations team.
So what does that show us then? It shows us that we need to understand the risk. The chances of you being in line for an aeroplane crashing on you, pretty unlikely. But then we saw that in 9/11. I mean, let's face it, nobody would have given that any sort of, ever thought that would have happened. But obviously, there's a whole spectrum of risks and the chance that they might happen. And you have to think about all of them. Also, obviously, there's an impact. And the impact could be you're out for a few minutes, you're out for a few hours, you lose data. Worst case, your business goes and you're out of business. Yeah. So you have to sort of tie the two up, don't you?
Yeah, you do. You have to carry quite a big piece of risk assessment. You need to understand the value of your systems and the data. If you're working in a highly regulated industry as well, you may have to work out what the impact is on regulation. We can all think about banks, but also obviously telecommunications companies, which are part of the national infrastructure. They all need to be protected.
Yeah, healthcare. You've got to keep records for people.
Of course, healthcare. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's dozens of industries. The legal profession, I'm sure, there's a requirement to keep documents.
Big pharmaceuticals, everything. Certainly. Yep. You know, they 100 years plus. So, for instance, a big fire in one of their archive in their data center, which wiped out their tape archive, or however they're archiving their data, would be bad news for them. But so they need to make sure they have multiple copies of this. It's not good enough to say, it happened, didn't it? Well, we weren't expecting it to. That's not going to wash with any of the regulators.
Yep. Now, in terms of how you actually develop a plan, I think I would hope everybody knows about RTO and RPO. So recovery time objective, how long it's going to take you to get back to an operating state compared to where you were when the disaster happened or the incident happened. And RPO, how much data you can afford to lose. Zero being can afford to lose no data. RPO, say 10 minutes, could be that you could afford to be 10 minutes out of date. And clearly those are SLAs, you know, service level agreements that you would put in place with the business. And you could class them as service level objectives, but I think internally they might be classed as objectives, but you know, they're really agreements that you want to put in place with the business that says, this is what we'll deliver on your behalf. Mm. And I think the key bit for me there is that the business needs to set their requirements. Now, you might want to help them out with that and give them a set of options, but ultimately, the only person who really understands the implications of losing that data and that application is the business owner.
I think it's a very interesting approach you have to take with this, and I don't know very many businesses who would do this. The business needs to set the requirement. That needs to be reviewed by your legal departments, and you have to agree that is what you need to do. Then it comes across to the IT architects or the specialists, and they design a system, and that's the bill. What we too often find, and I think we might get into this, is that the business set a requirement, and we need to understand this. I mean, sometimes business people have completely unrealistic views of the value of their data. That's why you need to get everybody involved in this. And they come back, they go to the IT team, and the IT team come back and say, it's going to cost you this. There is a sharp intake of breath, and then they decide they can live with a lower level. But there's no real indication whether they can or can't live with that lower level. I've seen this where it's the budget has been cut for DR or resilience, but actually the requirement's still the same. It has to be recorded, and that's why. So you have to get your corporate lawyers and whoever you got. Everybody needs to review this and agree that this is the budget. This is what it's been designed to do, and this is how it will work.
Okay, we'll come back and we'll talk about the cost side of it in a moment again, I think, because we need to go back into more detail about that. Let's finish off just this whole design piece, and then we'll come back and talk about those, because you've just raised some very, very interesting points there. So first of all, obviously, let's assume we've agreed what we're going to do. We've got a plan. I think you're right that you should be getting people to sign off on that plan, so that somebody's ultimately got some responsibility. Somebody needs skin in the game from the business to say, we've agreed this, as do all the other departments. But then you need to test it. You need to be testing, and you need to have a methodology that allows you to test as close and as realistically as possible. Now, I heard of one place, could be an urban myth, where somebody had gone into the data center, some new guy who was the new data center manager, CTO, whatever you want to call him, for a company. And he went in and just basically hit the power off button in the data center, took it all down and said, right, let's do the DR plan. Now, that seemed to me a bit of a radical approach, bearing in mind he couldn't actually get the data back. The DR plan wasn't good enough. It demonstrated what the risks were, but it probably wasn't the best approach to take without understanding whether you were really confident it would work.
Well, I would hope he'd had sign off on his CEO and everything like that beforehand, because if he hasn't, I would say that would be a very career-ending move for most people.
I'd agree.
It does make me laugh about DR test plans, but the amount of planning which often goes in to test the DR scenarios is massive. It could be months of planning to test something which is supposed to be a rare instant event, but you plan to test. Yeah. And I think the first time you do it, you have to. The first time you do it, you've got to be prepared that it's going to be a complete, utter shambles. If you never run your DR test plan before, the first time you run it, you'll scare everybody involved.
You've got to be fairly certain, though, that you're not going to damage or lose anything. I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, so most DR test plans, certainly historically, most people haven't flipped and flopped between data centers outside of those highly regulated industries. So we both worked in banks of some sort. DR plans were done, you just flip between your data center on the regular basis. The retail bank I worked at, we would run out of the other data center every quarter. In fact, we would rotate things around. It became practice. It was business as usual. What actually meant that if you did have a disaster, everyone knew exactly what they were doing. You'd done it often enough, you probably wouldn't have been a bigger shock.
Yeah. Well, that would be a great ideal scenario. And I've done the same, by the way. I've worked a similar sort of scenarios where we've done that. Part of the challenge, though, as we get into and we discuss the issues here, is that is pretty complex. That's a complex environment. And even if you look back at 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, our environments were a lot simpler than they are today. So, for instance, if we were still talking mainframe, or if we were talking some of the larger systems, a lot of those would just be simply failed over from one location to another. You think about, say, going to use SunGuard or somebody like that. You'd fail over from one location to another, and they'd be there with their equipment, and it would look like yours, and off you go. And that seems to be fairly simple, but even that would be complex. You throw into the mix, multiple servers, virtualization, networks that have got to be redone, DNS. There's a huge impact to doing that. So the DR plan almost has to be built into the design of the systems in the first place. So complexity is a massive issue.
If your DR plan is an afterthought, you've got a problem. Why are you designing these systems? You should be thinking, okay, how am I going to recover this? if it goes wrong? How am I going to cover this? But you're right. But promise. But we also now have a situation where we have so many dependencies for an application, and it's only going to get worse. It's going to get more and more complicated. In theory, microservices, you go, but have thousands. So that should make it easier. They should be easy. But in a disaster, that might make things worse. You may have so much more to try and recover from, because you've lots of little things to do. And you can bet your bottom dollar that there is some microservice somebody hasn't documented. And actually, if you've got more and more of these services, the risk of missing something becomes much more significant, I think, or much easier. That risk goes up. So your documentation has to be up to date. And let's be honest, nobody likes doing documentation, Chris.
No, I've seen documentation left on the same server as the one you were doing DR with. You know, that's sort of like, you know, you're missing the point there if you think you're going to use online documentation to do DR. Yeah. You're right, nobody likes to do it, but it's sadly, I think it's the only way you can mitigate against some of those challenges is you have to have really complex documentation. The challenge there being, of course, if you live in a world where it's fail, you know, change things, fail fast and move on, your environment could change so quickly, you've got to find other ways of documenting that environment. So either you're going to have to be able to visualize it through dynamic generation of the documentation in some way, or you're going to slow down the process of delivering applications to the business. So you've got to find some way to get around that.
You do. And I was just saying another thing, which we didn't have to deal with when we were dealing with this, Chris. We didn't have to. We were not dealing with hybrid applications, applications which are developed to run in very different ways. These days, you have legacy applications, you have cloud native, we have virtual. We have so much more to deal with. It's much more complicated. And actually, there's not one way of recovering them. That's the other thing. In the mainframe days, Chris, recovery was pretty straightforward in many ways. There was one way of recovering.
Yeah, you went to another mainframe.
Yeah.
And you recovered it from tape, or you had replicated data. That was pretty much it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But you're right, that's a big problem. And we'll touch on that in a bit more in a second, actually, because I've got another point on that. Now, I've added another point here, and that's how software upgrades can break things. Now, I quickly just mentioned that a second ago, and I was really meaning there internal software development. If you're writing your own applications, that you might do something that changes your application, and you might find that as you then go out into the business, you somehow break the system and you need to roll back. Now, that's not a disaster in the classic sense of a building dropping or something like that, but it is potentially super impactful, especially if you're delivering services to other people in an infrastructure method. But also there's that challenge that the vendor themselves could make changes to their equipment, and then you roll that out, and suddenly you find that you've done the rollout and it doesn't work out the way you thought it did. For us, a few years ago, we might have been able to get around that by mitigating it in the sense of doing it as an outage, doing it at a certain time of day, taking an outage. I think there's less and less opportunity to do that nowadays unless you've really cleverly designed your system. So, you know, just general change is a risk and has a risk in systems.
It does. I read something today. Simon Wardley tweeted something. It was about a company who had this is a salutary lesson for a lot of people for various reasons, but their DNS service was non-standard and was running internal to their ERP application, which was now to support. For whatever reason, their DNS has gone, and it is gone. They've lost it.
Wow.
They don't know what they've got. They don't know what records they had registered. They've lost the whole of their DNS. Now, that's a sort of disaster,
That's a disaster.
I don't know if they know if they can recover it or anything. I haven't tracked it anymore. And it's that sort of thing. It's actually some quite small things can actually generate massive disasters for you.
Yeah. I'll give you an example. Another one I can think of. I can never remember what it was specifically used for, but we had a Wind server at one environment where Wind server wasn't replicated. So we did the DR test, and of course, half the environment wouldn't come up because it couldn't contact the Wind server because it was in the site that was shut down. And what was the answer? Somebody drove to the primary site, unplugged the server, brought it back over, plugged it in, carried it on with the DR test. Well, at that point, it's a fail. But, you know, something as simple as that, we could be. But I suppose that's why you test. You test to find these things out, don't you? Let's face it. Yeah. That's part of the process. But you're right. Something small could really have a big impact, and that's really worrying. So you do need to be, obviously, just to say it again, you do need to test. But I also think you need to be very careful when you do upgrades, and you need to have a backup plan. So you need to know if you're going to do an upgrade, where you're going to go if it doesn't work.
So let's bring it into the world of storage. and the world of dealing with vendors. You and I have been involved in firmware upgrades on storage arrays.
Mm.
If you ever ask them what the backout plan is, how many times have you had a look of fear and just a comment, let's hope we don't have to do that?
Yep, there isn't one.
But basically, there isn't one. Okay. The only way is to recover from backup. Yep. Now, these days, well, hopefully you'd replicate your array, because these days we're talking about extremely large systems. Do you really want to be recovering multi-petabytes from tape?
Absolutely. And I agree. And so, you know, in that sense, we would never upgrade the same array or both sides of a mirrored pair over the same weekend. We would, without a doubt, we would leave it to the following weekend to let anything that was going to come out the woodwork come out.
Mm.
I think we'd also, I've worked in a couple of places where the primary and secondary were different hardware vendors and different products. So that if something went wrong on the first product, it couldn't affect the other one.
I have seen that as an approach. I've seen that certainly with primary and secondary storage arrays. I've seen it done with server operating systems as well. My argument with that was actually you've just put in so much more complexity, you've probably actually made it more likely you're going to suffer a problem.
Yes.
And in storage, you could do it. I've seen people use Veritas as their replication to prevent against storage array problems. Didn't actually point at that, but you were entirely reliant on Veritas, and if your Veritas had gone wrong, that didn't actually solve that problem. But lots of people did lots of different things, you know, to try and avoid the potential of something which attacked both. But actually, what we're beginning to see, Chris, is even with the growth of open source, a vulnerability, which were, say, in an open SSL library, won't just affect your Linux systems. It'll affect your Solaris systems, potentially your Windows systems, your BSD systems, the lot. So everything's actually impacted at this point.
Yeah. And let's just think about Spectre and, you know, the other process of vulnerabilities. You know, if those come along, you've got issues there as well. So I think, you can't protect against everything. So you have to be very careful. But one thing I would say with that is this is not part of our discussion today particularly, but it does make you wonder whether you need that copy of last resort, you know, that copy in a bunker, that copy of your data, that should everything completely go completely mental, you've got at least a way to go and find how to get a copy of your data at some point. You know, at least you've got some way of getting out of it. But that's a topic for another time. Let's go back and talk about the cost aspect, because this one is fascinatingly interesting, people's approach. So I will sort of position it and think exactly what you just said, that if you go and talk to the business and say to them, what would you like your DR to be? They're going to say, yeah, well, I want all my data back and I want it all back immediately. Then you show them the cost and they probably would tend to go towards the cheapest option rather than the right option. And that is a major problem. And I think it does make it difficult if there isn't somebody else validating that and signing off to say that's acceptable. Risk department, risk officer, somebody like that should be involved.
Yeah, they have to be. I think the scenario you have to do with that is, okay, you're willing to accept an RTO of hours, okay? And just even get them to play the thought game. You almost have to sit them in a room and, okay, systems, everything's gone off. Now you're going to sit there, and then in 8 hours' time, I'm going to walk in a room and tell you your systems are back. And while you're waiting 8 hours, write down all the consequences of this. What is happening to the business? I've never done it. I think it'd be a really interesting experiment to see and a really interesting piece of wargaming to do, because it's not even a case of terms. I just think people need to think about, okay, so this is what we can't do. This is a billing cycle we can't run. This is the product we can't ship.
And it's even wider, isn't it? So it's revenue, how much are we not making? It's how many customers are going to other suppliers? It's how many calls are we fielding at our, you know, call center? Because customers are ringing in saying, where's my order? You know, and how often is that happening? There's contractual obligations that you might be breaking that you now need to refund people, and there might be penalty clauses in those contracts.
Yeah.
It's significant to try and document what that potential impact is. And I think you're right, it's a really interesting way of doing it. I think that'd be quite good fun to try and build out some sort of template to help people understand, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's not a case of, don't worry about recovery of the system time, just assume that's happening.
Yeah.
Now let's war game what's actually going on in a business, because I'm pretty sure when most people do their DR tests, Most people actually don't flip between data centers. So the test itself will be relatively synthetic, and it really will be very focused on the technology and the IT team. You might have a few users involved who will run some synthetic transactions through, but nobody is sitting there thinking, okay, there's no clock ticking saying we've lost 10,000, 20,000, 100,000. The call queue is now for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 50 minutes. Twitter's just exploded. It's playing those mental games. And I just wonder if people did that, they may think a little bit more, at least take it a little bit more seriously.
I think there's precedent for that. So TSB had a big outage, didn't they, a few years ago, where their systems went down. I think they botched the migration. If they'd been taken over by some Spanish bank, they botched the migration to their systems, and they had to revert. And I think they were out for quite a while, weren't they?
Well, TSB were extracting themselves from, it was a demerger. They were extracting themselves from Lloyds. It was demerger, and yeah, they thought they got it, and it just went horribly wrong.
Yeah,
and they had to almost back the migration out and had to go back to systems which they didn't want to be on, and it cost a bit. The consequential loss to the business was massive because customers lost faith; they were losing customers. To try and attract customers, they bumped their interest rates. To retain customers, they bumped their interest rates because the reputational damage was so large. And if people can't get access to their money, I mean, something like money is pretty serious, they get very upset very quickly.
You're not kidding. Absolutely. Okay, let's talk about, in terms of the issues here, let's talk about perception, because that, we talked there about perception from the customer side and how the customer might feel and how the issues are perceived from an external focus. But I'm really interested to understand why so many companies, especially when we looked at the LVH outage and certainly Bunsfield, there were issues there, why people don't either seem to take DR seriously enough or they feel somebody else is going to do that recovery for them. And I'm really pointing my finger here at the public cloud probably, because everybody's got a story that sort of implies that people think that definitely SaaS, but possibly infrastructure as a service as well, people think that the cloud providers are going to recover your data for you, and that's just not true.
They don't. They might do, but you better read your contract. Yet again, your best part of every DR plan needs to involve your legal team, and you need to be looking at the contracts you sign. You need to understand, you have to say, okay, what is the responsibilities? You need a list of responsibilities, and then you need to say the worst case. Okay, so your data center's burnt down. I mean, we know. It's been enough times. People have lost regions, right? It's happened. We all know the famous Amazon region. Don't put your data in there. It's one which always seems to go wrong.
Yep.
All the big players now who are getting used to running their business in a cloud-native way, the big example, people like Netflix, who suffered their Christmas Eve outage because of this, understand this now and know they have to design for this. For a lot of small companies, not just small companies, probably small and medium-sized companies who haven't thought this through, and they just think it's magic.
Mm. And I'll pick an example for you as a comparison. Imagine you were starting an airline. Now, you're starting an airline, you're not going to build your own aeroplane because it's too complicated. So what do? You go and you lease one from a company that makes aeroplanes. So you wouldn't just buy an aeroplane from anybody. You'd probably go to somebody who's certified to manufacture aeroplanes. So you're likely to choose Boeing or Airbus, or a smaller one if it's a smaller requirement that you have. When you buy that aeroplane, it's unlikely they'll just go, thanks, and walk away. They're more likely to say to you, you need to talk to somebody about servicing, you need to talk about maintenance, there's a legal requirement for this, this, and this, and so on. So you'll never just walk away and think, okay, I can just fly this plane forever, it'll never need servicing or maintenance or management. And in fact, obviously, because that's a regulated industry, you couldn't actually get into operating your business until you demonstrated all the certifications to show you were doing all of those things. Yet, somebody can start up a business, doesn't have to be an IT business, but somebody can start up a business that uses IT, rent a server in a data center, build a set of services, offer them to a customer, and the customer has no understanding about whether the back end to that system has been protected, whether their data is protected, which is not a DR issue, but it is an issue. And it makes you wonder why we haven't got some sort of certification model for businesses to demonstrate that they're actually looking after your data properly and have got processes to make sure they stay in business.
Oh, I would have thought it would be part of any way of getting business insurance. Any way your liability insurance covers means that you must have a tested and documented DR plan. Without it, you're uninsurable. And certainly, you know, if you go out of business nobody's going to insure you for loss of business if you don't have a way of protecting yourself against loss of business.
But you as a customer don't necessarily know that, do you? That's part of the problem. There's the challenge that, you know, you rock up and you look at somebody and you could think, yeah, these look like this is a good service. I'll buy from them. And then find that they haven't actually put in the due diligence to do all of those things and have it certified in a way that you can visibly see that.
Yeah, you wonder if the public cloud providers, configuration boards, when they're guiding you through these things, they need to be asking you these questions. But one of the things, and now click this button for replication. And if you tick it off, it should be just come a big red box up and says, are you really sure? And explains to you the risk. We're not responsible for any of this, or we can be responsible for it, but it's going to cost you this.
Yeah. But is that a consequence of the world we live in for two reasons? So one, because the cloud obfuscates everything. So if you use it and you use it regularly and you never see a problem, you get very complacent and you think that everything's always going to work. And two, is there an issue with people's skills as they come into the industry to understand the implications about how to design systems? And are we missing a trick there?
I think so. I think people got complacent, but I also think there is a lack of skill. The NFRs, the non-functional requirements, and this is a problem as we move more and more to a DevOps type model, I worry that NFRs, non-functional requirements, will just get ignored. Now, some of those non-functional requirements are things like performance, but they are also your recoverability, your resilience, your availability models. Understanding that. But also understanding that you can build an availability model, which is brilliant, it's fantastic. But if it doesn't allow you to span regions, because within Amazon or Google, it's relatively easy to design something which is available within a region using an availability zone. But you've got to understand a little bit more, and it's going to cost you a little bit more if you want to design something which is going to span across regions, across data centers. It needs to be easy. Maybe public providers need to make it a lot easier to do, where you click a button and it replicates your application, it does this, it does that, it looks at how you got your storage configured or whatever, and it does all this for you. But it needs to be considered.
Yeah, the challenge for that, I guess, is that you just don't know what the customer's done in terms of their implementation. So as we just move on to the next bit, I just wanted to talk about how easy it is to do DR now. So, and this also leads into the complexity of understanding whether DR is being implemented or not. So, you know, you look at it today, and we said earlier, you know, in the mainframe days, we would have either owned an entire second data center. And certainly if you're big enough, you would have done, if you were a bank, for instance. If you weren't, even if you weren't a bank, even if you were a bank, you might decide you're not prepared to pay for a second DR site, and you might share one and, you know, go to a service provider who allows you to fail over to their data center. We see that today. So, you know, VMware on AWS, VMware in the public cloud, offers those sort of facilities and does that sort of replication in the background. But they're an easy one to pick out. But there are a million and one tools which will allow you to do failover to the cloud, failover between clouds, replicate your data. You know, Zerto do a sort of a DR solution. There was one that was acquired by Google that's allowed you to fail into the cloud or migrate and do sort of cloud bursting. We've got global networks, we've got global DNS, you can abstract that away from the cloud providers. So it's not like you can't do this, and it's not like the costs are necessarily super expensive. It becomes more complex and therefore more costly. But there's almost no excuse.
There's no excuse, and you don't have to build a second data center anymore.
Yeah.
You don't have to do the crazy things which we've all seen, you know, where the DR site actually has 50% capacity. That's relatively common. We laugh, but we've all been involved.
Test and dev used to shut down so that you didn't need to run too lots of equipment. Yeah,
yeah. There's lots of things. But these days, I mean, you don't have to do that. You could have it as long as you're using sensible automation. You could have it, and if you need to spin up a full copy of your data center with all your servers running, the right amount of memory, you're out of CPU, you're not compromising there. You know what? You can do it. And then you probably can go to your insurance company and get them to pay for it. But yeah, but you can do it. It's not a case of thinking, okay, so what? It actually simplifies the whole thing. We've all sat in those meetings, or well, not all of us, but some of us have, where you'd have your list of services. Now, which services can I live without? Which services? My argument is, which services will nobody notice if it's not there? And my argument at this point would be, you should just turn them off anyway, because nobody's going to notice. Yeah. So why are you even running in production? But
yeah, I agree. But there's always certain applications, for example, that create data that's derived from another application. So if it's going to cost a lot of time and effort to restore that system, sometimes the easiest way to get that data back is to run the batch that created it. So there are scenarios where you just don't need to keep that data and you can just start again. But it makes me wonder why do people just continue not to focus on disaster recovery? Do we feel like this isn't as glamorous a job as it is to be some guy who's in DevOps? You know, do we need the, like you said, DevOps with a specialism in storage? Do we need DevOps with a specialism in data recovery? You know, what's the reason?
I think it's not glamorous. And the thing is, Chris, you kind of hope whatever you've designed, if you've ever been done, will never, ever be used. You never have to invoke it in anger. You should test it, but you never have to use it. It's like, I really hope I never have to do this. And I think there's a bit of that. It's just not glamorous.
So is it human nature, do you think, then, to basically not do unproductive work? To feel like we don't want to do unproductive work because there's no logical benefit to see anything out of the end of it?
Oh, I think there is. There's two things here. There's human nature is you're not doing something which you're expecting to be used every day, so that's not very exciting, you're not very glamorous. Businesses don't see any business value in it because it has no business value until it does. But that business value you may never ever see that. But again, if you're lucky, you never ever see that business value. It's like it's like insurance premiums, isn't it, Chris? This is all we're talking about. It's insurance premiums. Yeah, you pay your insurance and you hope you never have to use it.
Yeah, maybe we need a Simpsons, the little thing in the Simpsons where they've got, you know, how many days since an accident. Yeah. Maybe people need to be rewarded for the number of days that they've achieved the system uptime without any sort of outage. You know, maybe that should be some reward, because even if you do have an incident, so, you know, yes, you hope it is never going to happen, but things do happen. And the issue is really more about that you anticipated it, hopefully, and dealt with it, and everything carried on. So even if you have a data center fire, which could happen, you're not trying to avoid the fire happening in the first place, particularly maybe somebody else's job with the right equipment. But assuming that goes wrong, you need to aid the recovery. So this isn't about avoiding the incident. This is about recovering from the incident and carrying on. And I think that maybe that should be rewarded more.
Yeah, I think so. You're right.
Okay. Okay, Martin, anything else to add?
Yeah, our good friend Greg, Ethereal Mind, on Twitter tweeted something about this whole thing a couple of weeks ago. He said, disaster recovery planning normally happens in that order. And I tend to agree.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah. Except because sometimes the middle one gets missed out.
Yeah, it does. But the planning seems to come afterwards, doesn't it, every time?
Yeah, I think mostly because you just don't think something's going to happen, but you go off and do the planning. Anyway, great conversation. That was really interesting. I just hope that people do try and put a bit more focus on DR, because I think it's so important to every business, and it's just not recognized as well as it should be. And let's just hope we don't continue to see failures, and we see it given a bit more respect.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris.
Okay. Catch you next time, Martin. Cheers.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked, or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.